Hey everybody, welcome to my channel. We have with us a special guest, Jack Peach. I bet Peach is not your real last name.
No, it is. No, that's my real last
Oh,
name.
really? Well, if you ever wanted to do porn, you wouldn't have to change your name. I'm sure you get these jokes all the time. I'm sorry.
I actually
Now,
never. That's a new one, but I
really?
mean, yeah, no, that's a new one.
Jack Peach? You kind of
It's
have a
more of a woman,
complexion
right?
like a peach too. I
Like
mean, it would be perfect.
it would be perfect, but I think it could be better for a woman in that role rather than the dude, right?
Yeah, there's kind of like the fruit into a note. You're right. Never mind. Maybe it wouldn't be that good. Well, for gay porn, maybe, if you ever had the
If
inkling to get
ever,
into something like that.
well, you never know, but at this time in my life, I think that stage has passed.
Yeah, it seems like you don't represent a lot of gay porn demographic in what you do. Okay, so let me just
Not
back
quite.
up. What do you do? But let's just go over that really quickly because I do think it's interesting. I do have questions about it.
I mean, it's basically what I am. The way that I like to frame it to people who, when I first meet people, the question always comes up, what do you do for a living? And it's always it's a bit of a weird one to explain, particularly to, an older demographic. But like, basically, the
Yeah.
way that I phrase it and the way I frame it is like, I help single Christian men get married. That, in a nutshell, that's what I do. Now, what actually is involved in that is quite a lot, and it's a more, it's a more palatable way of saying I'm a Christian dating coach, but ultimately that's the goal, is to try and help people get, guys who are struggling with women eventually get married.
Well, I like I help single Christian men get married. That seems more proactive than just like a Christian dating coach. Like that kind of seems lame, but it actually sounds like you're doing something that's better to put on a resume from what I know in my resume writing days back when I had to write those. Not that it ever worked or anything. Okay, so I think that's interesting because I could see like a huge hole in like the average Christian man's psyche when it comes to dating, and they go to
100%.
their priest or their minister asking for help, and I don't know, maybe he's never even been married,
Or, he's been in the dating pool 30, 40 years ago, and there's been a lot of changes in the past 30, 40 years. And,
right.
the
Just
way.
ask the girl to the Under the Sea dance, or I guess that's Back to the Future, but.
Just be intentional, just pray for it. And it's like, as a Christian, you should always pray for things, but like, it's well, there's the classic phrase. I think it's more within Catholicism than Protestantism, but it's work and pray, labora, ora et labora, which is work and pray. And what I am, I'm the kind of the way for you to put in the work to make your prayers get answered in the way you want them to be answered. That's how I like to frame it to guys, because I actually had that conversation with a guy online not that long ago. Kind of, I just made the argument like, there's a big hole in the way that Christianity talks about this issue, because like you say, the priests, if they, the way that they met their wife is not necessarily how a guy today will meet his wife, and like, they
Right.
don't really think about it because why would they?
Yeah,
You
they
know what I
don't
mean?
know. I'm sure there's something that our kids are gonna have to deal with that we're just not gonna know. And it's
100%.
nobody's fault, but we've gone through like seven cultural changes in the last 36 years. And I like what you said. It takes work, you have to put in the work. And something else I like that you say is you have to think about the kind of girl who you want to marry. And where is she going to be? And I think a lot of guys get freaked out by that because what if the girl asks you, "Oh, what are you doing here?" You're like, no, it's okay. You can say it. I'm here to meet women." And I think that comes from a really powerful place. Like, yeah, I want a girlfriend.
For sure. It's always good to take ownership of what you really want. But it's also like the one thing that's like the first one of the first things I always work on with guys is, like, let's make a, a vision. Let's make an avatar of this woman that we're not going to meet, but at least it gives us an idea of like,
Right.
what we're looking for. And it also gives me an insight into them and things like that. But
Yeah.
the first thing to do is to find a place, not just where women are going to be, but also where you are going to enjoy going anyway as well. There is an element of like, obviously it's good to push yourself out of the comfort zone, but if there's somewhere where you just really don't want to be there and you're just there to meet women, it will show through though. And you will just come across a bit awkward and uncomfortable. Whereas if you if you enjoy,
if you just do that for 4 years in a row, it doesn't, it really doesn't get that bad. This is me when I was single, but
eventually it gets there. But I do think it does help that, especially
if you're just creepy enough for a long enough period of time, it just kind of just works itself out.
Eventually,
it's like herpes; it just goes away eventually.
I wouldn't know, but I'm sure that.
Yeah, me neither. Anyway, so back to you, and you're talking about. So Christian men, yeah, you got to go to where the women are that you want to meet. I tell people all the time, that's how I met my wife.
Yeah.
I want a girl who likes spending time outside and who reads. So I would just go to the girls in the park who are reading and just talk to them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, this is what she would be doing. And I don't, we may get divorced next month or something. So I don't know. I don't want to say that some, actually I have some questions about divorce that we could talk about, but,
yeah, sure.
Anyway, I was just saying.
So sometimes it is worthwhile to think, like, people do overcomplicate these things for sure. Like, if you look at like general discourse of dating online, like, I have a real belief that people just overcomplicate the hell out of this stuff. Like, yeah, it's pretty simple. As long as you're meeting women consistently and you're putting your best foot forward, eventually you'll meet one who likes you enough and you like enough that it'll work itself out.
Yeah.
Now, there are mistakes that you can make that, you know, that will. But like, I hosted a workshop this weekend. I think kind of one of the core points of the workshop was, it's more important just not to make mistakes than anything else. It's like if you, half of early dating anyway, is just not messing stuff up.
Just show up and be normal.
Yeah, basically. It's,
like,
it's,
can you walk like over to her, say hi and be normal? That's huge.
And
not like twitch or do anything weird. Just be a guy. I'm like, hey, I think you're pretty, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it works. I mean, it depends on the guy, right? Some guys can pull that off, some can't. So there is an element of, like, if you've got a very, you know, you're very self-assured, you come across very self-assured in yourself, like, that kind of attitude can really work. Whereas if you are a little bit more, you know, a bit less self-assured and have a bit less self-confidence, we have to build that self-confidence somehow. And, you know, sometimes, you know, for a guy like that, going just direct in and doing that will often not work that effectively. But again, ultimately, I'm a pragmatist and I'm a realist, actually, even though, you know, people would say, oh, how can a, you know, a religious guy be a pragmatist? But I am actually very pragmatic in my approach to life. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I always get guys to do to build that self-confidence is to just go out and actually meet people and actually go on dates. And even if you go on a date with a girl, this is something a lot of Christian guys don't like doing. They think if you go on a date with a girl that you're not 100% sure about, you're somehow leading them on, which is like just completely the wrong attitude. Where it's like, how do you know? If you're not 100% sure, how are you supposed to be 100% sure when you've just met a stranger? Like,
yeah.
Like, really, like, there is an element of some people you
click
with.
Well, at what point do you lead them on, though?
The point when you realize there is nothing there. That's how I see it. If it's two or three dates in, you've enjoyed the time with each other, and then you kind of got the clarity that it's not, you know, it's not going anywhere, then you should always be upfront and not continue at that point. But there's also an element of, you know, going on two or three dates with someone, as long as you're having fun and she's having fun, you know, it doesn't have to lead to marriage.
Yeah, two or three dates. Well, I think the problem there
but it
is...
Depends.
Yeah, I think the problem there is guys will start to date a girl and they're not sure, and they'll see her for like 3 times a week, like for 12 weeks in a row, and they're still thinking about it, and they don't realize that they've been leading her on by spending a boyfriend amount of time with her.
Yeah.
And like you don't think you have a girlfriend? No, she's your girlfriend. If you've been seeing her this much... Yeah, that's one of my practical pieces of advice is, when you do date, only see that girl once a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
once,
like,
twice maximum.
Like yeah. Animals have fixed action patterns. I think humans do too, to some degree. I mean, we have a consciousness, of course. But I think that's one of those things where, like, a lot of it's just not controlled. It's like monkeys in grooming. Like, part of what they do when they're grooming each other is, you know, they're getting the ticks off, but also their body chemistry changes when they spend time closely like that on the tree branch, you know, like eating each other's, you know, ticks off their back. And you realize, oh, that's kind of like the subtext. Like, we have subtext of our communication. That's the subtext of the monkey chimpanzee grooming communication. And I think it's the same thing in humans. So yeah, that's just something to be conscious of, that
For sure. And that, you know, this is one of the things, like when I'm talking like this, I'm talking very much with people that I'm working with directly. And that's the kind of thing, like I'll be straight up. Like if you get them, that's one thing I always say, like if you're dating, you want to date once, twice a week maximum until you're at the point where like, okay, this is something more serious. Because it also gives you the chance to be more clear in your head as well. Because when you're spending that much time with someone, it also can, you know, there's an enjoyment to that process, which especially if you've not dated much before, that the enjoyment can supersede, you know, the kind of the enjoyment of having that experience can supersede the reality of the person. Whereas like just because this is a novel experience and it is, you know, being in a, you know, being emotionally intimate, it feels good. It's important. Emotional intimacy is a core need that humans have. So yeah, it's, you know, that's one thing I've got to be careful of. Like when I'm giving advice like this, this is what I talk with directly to my clients, where there is context there. So yeah, if you're listening, and it's good to clarify that and to remind me of that.
Right. Yeah, guys go for just like the validation, the good feelings of being in a relationship, even though it may have nothing, like she may have all these crazy problems. In fact, you know, I find when a lot of guys are tuned out of their emotions, they come 100%. Across a girl who's just, you know, more, you know, histrionic, traumatic on the, you know, personality disorder, you know, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, and you may find yourself attracted and very much needy, you know, it's like you're a dry sponge soaking up all this water. I think a lot of guys go into relationships emotionally in a drought.
100% is the core. It's the core thing I try and fix with my clients. Like I've never had a client who didn't have some degree of emotionality issues which needed resolving. I've never had one, ever.
And so how do you go about doing that?
Well, I don't want to give away all the juice, but like the key steps is really like begin to develop emotional awareness. So like you always have emotions running through you, like as a human, unless you're literally a psychopath.
100% of the time, there's always a feeling.
There's always, and our feelings are also the only thing we experience here and now. You know, whenever we're thinking about something, we're either in the future or in the past. Like we're actually not here right now. And that's not a bad thing, right? That's actually what makes guys like this quite successful, by the way, is because we can plan things out. We can reflect on past mistakes. Yeah. But guys often have a tendency to get locked into those patterns. Whereas, you know, one of the things I'll always say is if you're feeling, even if you're like reminiscing, like before this call started, me and Mark were talking about my son, right? Like people don't know, my son passed away about a year or so ago, a bit over a year ago. And like, if I think about that time, obviously it makes me feel sad, right? But I'm not remembering the sadness then. The remembrance is causing me to feel sad now. So our emotions are in the here and now. And a lot of guys kind of almost zombie walk through life because they're not aware of the way they're feeling. So the first thing to do is get that emotional awareness. And I do have a step-by-step process for doing that, which I'm not going to talk about. The second...
I talk about mine all the time, but okay.
That's good.
We can talk about mine. You can critique it.
Exactly. I'll 100% will use that because I'm sure you can add value to my process as well, just from my perspective and the selfish perspective. The second thing is then once you've developed that emotional awareness is to discover the ways that those currently unconscious emotions are causing unconscious patterns of behavior in you. And then we need to become aware of those unconscious patterns of behavior. And they will often be, you know, a reference mistake. Half of dating is not making mistakes. Like those mistakes are often the unconscious patterns of behavior that you're feeling in response to the emotions you're having with women. Right. And then.
Yeah, this is great. This is what I do. It feels like this is me talking. I didn't know you did all this stuff, but this is good.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously what we use is a little bit different, but whatever. Yeah.
Of course, yeah, and we'll probably have a slight different methodology for doing it, I'd imagine, but, you know.
But I do think that's a very important point that you said there that I do just want to stay on a second, is the only thing you really have access to on a psychological level is your feeling state. That's really it. So I think we have a bunch of healthy needs, but fundamentally, your psychological need is to have a feeling, identify it, and express it in a healthy way.
Yeah.
That's really what we're doing here.
Yep, pretty much.
Anyway.
And like I will always, I can. So on this point, the reason, like one of the things I'm very proud of in my program is that I can actually generate like lasting success in my clients, which is normally quite rare for dating coaches, which are more, you know, there's obviously there's a reputation that a lot of them have. Not all of them are bad, obviously. There's some great ones. I know you're friends with Pat, who is also a friend of mine, but he's one of the few other guys that I would recommend to do this with. And mm-hmm. there's my friend Taylor, who I also think has a very good approach. Although we have more differences, I think, in our approach, but that's fine. She does good work. I know she does. But in general, a lot of guys, they're just looking for that quick win so they can make the guy feel like they got their money's worth, and then they just don't really care beyond that. Whereas what being able to do this, and I'm sure what you do with your clients as well, and you're a therapist, right? Correct?
Yeah, I'm a therapist.
Yeah. And is like when you actually do develop and you get the, because what we're talking about of the emotional awareness, I think, is a very abstract concept that's very difficult for more logical, rational guys to get their head around, especially mm-hmm. if you've had, you know, 20 years of patterns, of behavior patterns of not dealing with this, and they're just ignoring it and repressing it. Mm-hmm. But when you actually get it, and when you have someone working you through the process, like myself and like Mark, it does cause serious lasting change, where it's like almost the way you live life changes. Like it's like you have a different kind of like ontological understanding of the world, where suddenly everything like works in a different way. And you know, that's why so many of my clients as well will end up getting married. They do have, I've got numerous clients who've had kids now with the woman they met working with me or just after working with me. You know, get guys who change their career paths around. Like it's a pretty common thing, because ultimately, like, women become this vector. Like a guy who's not succeeding with women normally has a problems with these emotions, and then women become the vector for him to figure out this problem. And it's like in that area mm-hmm. of his life, you can't ignore it. When your job and your work, you can ignore it. You're a hyper-logical, hyper-rational guy who's always thinking in the future, in the past, you'll probably be pretty successful at work to a point, because their soft skills are still important. And again, that's also why a lot of my clients get promotions. They tend to plateau. And then at that point, what's holding them back is the other guys at the same level are just as smart, but they're better with their emotions. So they keep going up.
And they can talk to people. Yeah, nobody gets weirded out when they walk into a room. Yeah. That's not going to do much for your, climbing up the corporate ladder. But yeah.
But yeah, it's about that deep lasting change.
It's tough to do, though. I mean, it's very difficult and it's painful. And I think, I tell people all the time to go to therapy. Like you you can just half-ass your way through it and do a couple of worksheets. But to really, get into stuff and look at, it's ultimately like how you cause all the problems in your life. Like effectively, that's what therapy is. Like, how are you responsible for everything? Even the person who you think like really hurt you. Yeah, I mean, there's abuse and things like that. But
you still have some role to play.
And obviously, if you're a kid, you didn't have a role to play, but you still perpetuate that issue in your own way, and you get like a sick gratification from it. Like I always say, the metaphor of building or growing an orchid and doing it perfectly, and then the night before the big orchid competition, just getting drunk and stepping on it, and like the sick gratification you get out of doing stuff like that. So yeah, it's a. You gotta be in a place where you're just ready to face all that, and it's going to be painful. It's not a complicated. I think it's a very simple process when you get right down to it. I mean, identify a feeling, feel it. Actually, like it's okay to have a feeling, and then how do you express it in a healthy way? Well, the problem is, and I know you're aware of this, and I'm sure you're conscious of this in what you do. Is when people typically express emotions, it's, the guy in Marin County, in California, we'll just say, who has like a tie-dye shirt and, is going to Cafe Gratitude, that kind of thing.
Sunning his balls.
Well, actually, at our old house, I did have a very private backyard, and it was going around Twitter. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to try it.
I think we all tried it, but
oh, everybody tried it? Okay, this is like an open secret. I felt it was funny just because it's hilarious to be lying in your backyard with your balls in the air. But I think it elevated my mood from that perspective. But
feel like a boss, right? That's more, I think that's probably where the advantages come from. It's like, it's the
right,
the,
like
the
if
I don't
you're
care mentality.
like if you feel comfortable enough to just lie on the African savanna with your legs spread, with your ankles behind your back and your balls up in the air, like you must be dominant. Like you must be very self-assured. So maybe it's some lizard brain thing. So
yeah, I think that's probably a big
I
part
think
of
it works. I recommend
yeah.
it. It probably doesn't work for the reason why people say.
Yeah.
Which I'm not
maybe.
Sure what that reason is anyways. But anyway, what were we talking about?
I can't remember, to be honest. We're talking about Cafe Gratitude, and then I just flashed to one of the crazier members of the scene.
and so, you know, there's a way to express emotions and be emotional and not just be a total fruitcake about it and not push women away. And I think there's a masculine way of doing it as well.
That's the other thing. There's a masculine way of doing it as well, like, which is really important.
Yeah. I think it's different. I mean, we could probably quibble over the details on exactly how to do it, but it's something that, you know, going to coaching or therapy or whatever. It's something that's really important to do. But I think that what we were going back to before is guys who are emotionally tuned out, then they get a girlfriend and it feels really good. And guess what? She's a reflection of them. And then he feels his own emotions through her own emotions and all that stuff just comes out. And then they do push women away. But it's not because they express emotions, it's because it was all unconscious and they weren't aware of it before. They haven't like talked it over with somebody else. And you will definitely push women away doing that. And women have a right to leave you.
Yeah. Because
it's like, dude, well, now there's stuff in your unconscious. Well, you're not safe to be around, you know?
Yeah. And they can pick up on that, by the way. Like, it's women are very in tune with that slight disconnect. Like, if you want to think about it in a kind of tribal threat, you know, men are a threat to women historically and, you know, even today, of course. And
I believe men are still a threat to women.
Yeah.
And women are a threat to men. And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, exactly. In a different way.
If we couldn't eat each other, what's the point? Like, I'm just bored, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
might as well marry a dude at that point.
Was it nothing like a little bit of cannibalism on a Friday night, you know?
What does it matter? Yeah.
But yeah, like women pick up on that. They can pick up on those subtextual cues because it is in some ways like a defense mechanism where, like, not a defense mechanism, like a, you know, a threat recognition.
Well, a healthy defense mechanism.
Healthy.
Like this guy is being a little bit sketchy and I have some intuition that tells me
he's a little bit off.
I'm just going to trust it.
Especially early on, right? This is why I say, like, not making mistakes is more important than anything in the early stages, because I like to visualize like attraction and relationships like a fire. And like when you first like talk to a woman, it's like literally just like, you know, hitting a flint. It's just, you're just throwing a spark and seeing if it catches. And if there's you know, if there's no mutual attraction there's nothing you can do about it. It's just not landed in the right place.
Yeah.
If you get into a first date situation, it's like there's that first flick of flame. But if you just breathe wrong, you're going to put that flame out. You know, if a slight trickle of rain comes in or a gust of wind, it's going to put that out. And sometimes these things are just out of your control, by the way. You can't control wind. Sometimes logistical things do legitimately happen. And then when you're, you know, say in an early relationship a month in, it's like, okay, there's a little, you know, some warmth there, something's caught, but it's not yet, you know, it's still, again, if it's a rainstorm, or a big problem comes up in her life or in your life, or there's just an issue that, you know, isn't been able to resolve it, that it's very easy to knock that fire over. Whereas if you've been married, you know, I've been with my wife, not married the whole time, but we've been together nearly 8 years. Like at this point, and if you're like, for example, my parents who have been together, I don't know, 40 years or something, I don't know how long they've been together, to be honest, but like at that point, it's almost like a bonfire or it might be smoldering away, which is like very, it can be put out, but it generally takes quite a lot of work or just not putting any fire on any, you know, logs on the fire for a long time will eventually put that fire out, which is when divorce happens, which is, I know, one of the things you want to discuss. So maybe this is a good segue. But that's why you got to avoid those mistakes early on, because, you know, you can make small mistakes later on in marriage or later in the relationship process and you can resolve them, right? You can't leave them unresolved, but you can resolve them. People can overlook them. They're not going to just leave you. Hopefully, if she's a good quality woman, she's not just going to, you know, the snap of a hat, leave you. But if you don't resolve them, then that's when you're not putting the logs on the fire in this analogy, right? Eventually it will die out. But in the early stages,
well, you got to keep approaching the relationship. That's putting a log on the fire. Like,
exactly.
guys think, oh, I got to approach a girl and then I'll get a girlfriend. I'm done approaching
That's
girls.
it.
Like, no, dude, you're practicing approaching this girl because eventually you're going to have to approach your mom on her deathbed. Do you think this is any different? Like, you're approaching your emotions as a reflection of the most important
Yeah, that's
woman in
better.
your life. That's what's going on here. And it's not just going to go away. And that's putting logs in the fire in the relationship is like, I mean, you know, you're married. I mean, geez, some conversations I need to have with my wife. I'd so much rather, you know, so much easier to be a single guy and you just have
Oh
to go
yeah.
talk to a girl in the coffee shop. Like, that's it's
That's
nothing. It's a
easy.
joke.
Yeah. It's the self-reflection and the humility that's required to resolve those issues within a relationship or within a marriage when you're literally like unconsciously doing something to hurt the other person that you're not even aware of. And to then like accept you're doing that and then say, yeah, you're right, and I need to change. Like that's a humbling thing. I often talk about this again in relation to Christianity, where it's like I was raised an atheist and I became a Christian. And possibly, other than losing my son, the hardest thing I ever did was become a Christian. Like the actual repentance and the acknowledgement of, you know, the whole of the way I've been living my life is wrong requires a huge level of humility and pain. It's not like it's not fun. It's not that was not a fun process for me. But going through that process, I think made me a better, more humble, more, you know, made me a better man in many other ways on a, you know, I'm trying to keep it more in, less on the religious side, more on a kind of, you know, pragmatic way of looking at things. Just going through that process alone made me a better person, regardless of all the, you know, the scriptural behavior mechanisms and things.
You're putting logs on your own fire.
Yeah, exactly.
You're wetting your own sponge. I mean, it's, you know, this is all great imagery.
Yeah. Whereas you can sometimes see other guys online in our space who are Christian or born again Christians, where I'm not sure if they went through that painful process. The way that they talk makes me, okay, maybe this is me being overly judgmental and I shouldn't judge other people. Maybe they're just a few steps behind me
Yeah,
on
but
that.
judging
And
people's a
just
lot
leave
of
that.
fun, so
And you can read patterns in people, and those patterns are important for you to know for how who you're interacting with as well.
well,
So
there's a
there is.
huge problem with like guys in the red pill community and how they
Yeah.
treat women. And
Yeah.
obviously I'm not a feminist because I'm not an idiot, but
Yeah,
also I can
same.
see how, you know, I could you have to understand why feminism exists. And
Yes.
guys will really try to control women, and it's yeah, I mean, some of the things some guys say, I mean, I don't have any examples, but it's all like manipulation. It's all chess playing. It's all,
It's all
ooh, I'm
rhetoric.
gonna put my chess pieces here, and I know my wife, and she's gonna do this, and it's all this crazy control game. And that is, yeah, that is taking logs off the fire. And then people wonder why they're miserable. And oh,
Yep.
I don't know why. For some reason, I just don't want to be with the same person. Maybe I'm just not monogamous. I mean, you know, you need like get polyamory. See, now I'm judging people. Now I'm judging.
It's all good. A little
You
bit of
know, and
judgment's
yeah,
good. You
so
ju
it's.
I think it's good to judge actions, but not the person. Like there's I don't know, like maybe we're getting a bit off the weeds here, but like I try not to judge people as individuals, whereby like okay, like I say, like I've got a guy that I've got specifically in mind that I'm not going to name or anything, but like I'm just going to use him as a reference point for me, where like he could just be a few steps behind me on the journey. And like I've been in that position myself. So I don't judge him, but I'm still going to judge what he says and the way he acts. Right. Where it's like, I think what you're doing is wrong and I think you should learn from this, but hopefully you can move through it. I'm not saying you're condemned or you're evil, you're a bad person. You might just be a couple of steps behind me. Now, if you do it for 10 years, at that point I might be like, well, okay. But like,
It's your right to make fun of them.
oh yeah.
That's totally okay to do. Yeah. Jeez, I guess I got lost. And what was
Yeah,
I
we
going to
kind of went
say?
off in the weeds a little
Something about the oh
bit,
yeah so you talked about becoming a Christian, how it was difficult, and I say yeah, I mean, that's the early Christian church from what I understand, is just people getting together admitting their sins to each other.
yeah,
And I think the
pretty
best form
much.
of that now is, well, I don't know, maybe you can get that group, but I see group therapy as being a, it's, I mean, it's not Christian, and I'm actually not a Christian, but I don't see it being like that, but it very reminiscent of an early Christian church. And I think other sects that were going on at the time, just like getting together and saying like, yeah, this is where I sin. This is where I miss the mark. And that's really difficult to do without squirming and without performing. You know, because you can squirm and perform your way through it, and I don't know, are you really doing it?
That's why it's a private practice. You know, like I believe true, like, so I'm like, this is a, okay, we're going to be a little bit theological, but like, for example, there's a slight difference in the way that like Catholics view Christianity versus Protestants. So I'm like a Baptist, right? That's just the church that I fell into, basically. There's no more, nothing more to it than that, basically. But the idea of like, there's the vertical relationship with God, or there's a horizontal relationship with God. Whereas Catholicism has a much more horizontal relationship, where your relationship is actually with your priest, who has the vertical relationship, right? So that's a bit more like group therapy-esque. You confess in front of someone. Whereas like in Protestantism, and this is what my belief, what I think is better personally, is, and maybe the other thing I have is like, in terms of denominations, I don't get into this one's better than the other. I think like certain personality types fit better into different things. And I think that as a Christian, I believe that's why God allows different denominations to exist. It's, you cast your net wide with a
That's good.
slightly different, you know, with a, it's the same core concept, but there's a slightly different angle on it, which means that this person resonates with this and this person resonates with that, and that's fine as far as I'm
See, that
concerned.
feels like it should be that, like, I bet somebody's done that, like Myers-Briggs in your denomination in the
Yeah,
Christian church. Like,
I
if you're a
think
Methodist, you're more likely to be like, I guess, you know,
I'm sure
whatever.
someone's done that. Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm sure someone's done that.
I
But that's why
would be interested. That would be very
Northern Europeans are
interesting.
Protestant, right? Because we're more individualist, more logical, more rational. We prefer that private practice of the vertical relationship, because I'm British, right? And all my descent is like Northern European. I'm Irish, Scandinavian, French. I suppose not Northern, but French, I assume it's Norman. I don't know for sure. And I haven't done a 23andMe. This is just the stuff I know from my family tree, right? But and I like that private thing where it's like I come to God privately in prayer. And if I, as long as you're genuinely repentant, it allows for me a level of honesty that I couldn't do in a group setting. That's just me. Like I just there's something about it when it feels performative, even if it's not. It's there's this trigger going
Yeah,
on within me.
but I would argue that's the issue to work through. Because
Probably an
maybe you
element of
feel
it.
like you would do it in a performative way, and I would say, yeah, well, okay, that's like what insecurity is coming up. Like, let's go back and communicate that in a different way.
For
I mean,
sure.
look,
And
I don't want to
there have
sell, I
been
don't think everybody has to go to group or anything, but I'm just.
no, it's this is why there's elements of this is also where I kind of, you know, there's a problem also with pathologizing everything as well, where we don't want to pathologize everything, where there are personality types. Like, not everything is a condition. You know, there are people are born with certain personality types, and as long
Right.
as you are acting healthily and you're doing good in the world, and like, you know, again, this is probably where Christianity somewhat deviates from secular style beliefs, is that we are in within Christianity, we are inherently flawed, and there's nothing we can do about it. All we can do is strive to become better. The only perfect man is Jesus, and we can't be Jesus. We can't be perfect. We can strive to achieve that, but we're always going to fall short. And as long as you're striving and you're generally big picture, in my opinion, doing good, and you're trying to improve, like, you don't have to pathologize every aspect of yourself as well. It's the same in Christianity when you get, you know, I get clients who believe all sexuality is sinful, and they've actually pathologized the fact that having sexual desire is sinful, because there are elements of sexual desire which are sinful,
Yeah.
right? And I think therapy can do the same thing in a different way, where it's like sometimes we just got to accept that, like, we do. You know, I have I've had this conversation with my wife a few times. Like, I'm just not a very conscientious person. Now, that doesn't mean I can't work on being more conscientious and trying to be better in that, but I'm never going to be
Yeah.
like my wife's level of
Oh yeah,
consciousness.
I mean,
And
look,
that
if you're
yeah.
talking about being perfect, yeah, I mean, I, you know, tell people that all the time. Your issue when you're 20 is going to be your issue when you're 60. It's going to be the same issue. It's just,
It's how
and you
much you
become
work on
more
it.
aware of it and more fluid
Yeah.
with it and understand it. So I guess I agree with you from that perspective. Right. Yeah, that's good. But what were you
I
saying? I
don't know what we.
interrupted.
Oh, it's all good. I think that was big.
Yeah, the sexual shame. So you must get that a lot too.
Yeah, of
I'm
course.
actually reading through the New Testament now, and I'm at the Corinthians and Galatians, and it's all about sexual immorality. And I don't know, man. Like, some of that stuff, it seems very. And like one thing I like about the church, like I see our two dominant religions now is Christianity and Marxism. I like Christianity because it's evolved. Marxism still in this like crazy virulent form. But yeah, some of that early Christian, I mean, he's pretty, you know, he's pretty strict on sexuality and referring it to at this thing that needs to be repressed and kept down. And so I understand where it comes from, but I think the church, and you know what, something that happened, I don't know if you have any opinions on this, but what about, because I mean, you're not a Catholic or anything, but what about the Assumption of Mary in 1950, putting Mary up on the same level as the Trinity?
Yeah.
Now, I think that is a sign. Well, I mean, I get this from Jung, of course, but you know, I think that's not a big, I mean, I think we're, I think culture is getting to this place where we're really coming to terms with this thing called emotions or feminine, as represented by the Assumption of Mary. And I think like, we're just really trying to get a hold on it. And I think you're trying to do it in the specific context of Christian men and dating and saying, yeah, there is this other side, like sexual desire, maybe in a certain context, expressed in an appropriate way, it's actually really healthy.
Yes, that's the key, is the appropriate way. Right. So the things we've got to remember as well in that time is like there was no contraception. There was no, you know, there was no condoms to prevent sexual spread. So like the actual physical, like immediate physical repercussions of sexual immorality in this sense were real, tangible, and could ruin a person's life.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Whereas now we, through technology, we have somewhat disconnected from that that biology within us, where technology has created like a barrier between our biology, which means we can, you know, we can subvert. We have it's so the technology is trying to solve for the same problem, right? That the theology was trying to solve for. This is my view on it. Again, going in.
I'm just trying to follow your thought process. No, it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you're trying to solve the same problem, which is, you know, unwanted children, you know, through a lustful act in the Christian, or, you know, casual sex in modern parlance. It's the same thing. You know, it's the same thing. It's just different language to discuss the same thing. And we try and limit that by saying that's immoral, and we don't allow either whether it's some social controls of, you know, not letting men be unaccompanied with women, for example, in the past, or whether it's we provide easy access to condoms. It's like what we're actually trying to solve through these things is the bringing into life in this world that is not going to be given the proper footing it needs to thrive in this world, essentially, you know, if we boil it down. The thing is like,
and I think it's a you know, pat on our back that we've come this way technologically where we can separate sex from contraception.
For sure.
And we can just enjoy the process.
For sure. But that also does come with, you know, like this is why I say technology separated us from biology, which I do think, you know, the more the statistic, again, you could say correlation doesn't equal causation, but the statistics are pretty clear that like people who engage regularly in casual sex have worse life outcomes, whether that's drug use, whether it's depression, whether it's suicide, all these things are pretty well understood.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's, I would argue as a Christian, that's because we're living out of the technology has allowed us to live out of alignment with God's will. But what we can say in a modern sense, which I think is the same thing, it's just talking about the same thing using different language, is that technology has allowed us to live outside of our biological reality. And again, these are the same things. It's just one's looking through it from a religious lens, one's looking from a scientific lens. Because I've lived on both sides of the aisle, right? This is why I have a slightly different perspective, because I was an atheist. Mm-hmm. And like I still have that grounding in my life, which allows me these kind of almost like I can dip into both camps in my head, right? Mm-hmm. So there are consequences to that style of living that I think, but just now they're not immediate consequences. It's like deferred consequences rather than like in the moment, you might feel a little bit of shame. You had like, you know, I've lived that life. You have a one night stand. You might afterwards.
Well,
be like,
I think
that was a little bit embarrassing. Like,
well, so I think I agree with you everything that you're saying. My one disagreement though is I think casual sex is like a gradient, and I think there's a really unhealthy way to do
that's
it.
Fair.
I mean, you know, I think if you have sex with somebody under false pretensions or false presumptions, like they think that you're richer than you are or something, or I don't know. Like, I think that's, you know, that's going to split you in two, you know, but I think just being honest and upfront and just being very genuine.
But do you not think they will also be telling themselves some lies in that situation, like telling themselves the lies? Like often someone in that situation, you know, are they actually happy in that situation? Is it what they really want? Or is this just a mechanism to try and get that need met in an unhealthy way? And they convince themselves that this is all okay.
Yeah, well, that may be true, but I mean, that's not my responsibility. My responsibility is my own feelings and whether I'm being honest. And yeah, I mean, if some girl's responding to me because I'm like her abusive, I don't think I ever would be like, I mean, that would be more unhealthy. But no, I think if a girl's responding to me because I am like a father who she loves and trusts, then yeah, I think that's fine too. As long as I'm coming off as like a genuine way.
Yeah. See, that's where I would have a slight disagreement, but I do understand where you're coming from. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not, I get what you're saying, although I would disagree, I'll be honest.
I just think, I would never want to shy away from the idea that sex is fun. And of course, yeah. It provides this very important procreative function. But
absolutely.
I mean, I don't want to. I don't know. Like, having sex is like this thing that introduces you into humanity. And, you know, I just, you know, maybe if I grew up in the 1940s or something, I would have gotten married at 18 and it wouldn't have been a problem. But, you know, I did all this late. I had a, you know, long adolescence. So maybe that's my issue, right? So maybe it has nothing to do with the casual sex.
That would be my argument. Yeah, it's like society was structured at that time, which you referred before, that like, not that sex is bad. It's just sex is, and I would say the same, like sex is great. Don't get me wrong. I love, like when you're in a relationship now, you can still like, and I do for, because now I only work with Christians, right? I transferred this out maybe a few months ago. I did work with secular guys as well previously. And what I always used to say, I don't want to force my beliefs on those guys, right? Because that's not my position, even though I would always tell them what I think and what I believe is better. But the way that I would always frame it is, you know, it's better to have sex within a relationship. At least be in a relationship before you're having sex. And the whole of society used to be structured to get men in a position where they were mature enough and adult enough and went through the rites of passage that meant by the time they were 18, 19, 20, 21, they had enough. And obviously it's not a perfect system. I'm not going to deny that. Like they hadn't, just like today is not, like they had enough maturity that yes, you could get into a relationship that led to marriage and could enjoy sex in a marital setting. Like I'm not saying that sex is bad. Of course it's not.
I know you're not saying that.
Yeah, right. Joyful things in the
context,
in life,
right?
In the right context. Yeah. And you've got to create that context to enjoy that. It's also like there is an element of responsibility that comes with it as well. Like anything in life, like.
Well, with the right technology, as you were saying.
Yeah, but that doesn't. That's still
emotional
take,
responsibility. Yeah, like you got to be responsible to be honest. I think you're right.
Yeah.
And I do think that's really important.
The person as well. Like, you know, like. And sometimes it can be great and it can be, you know, I've had casual sex. I wasn't always Christian. Like, and yeah, it can be fun. But like, I do think there is always some degree of a cost. And if I look back on the women that I engaged in that with, they were all in some way damaged when I look back on it. Because I do think, and again, that might be a product of the scene that I was in and the product of the way that I engaged with it, because I was very much like a, you know, a party style guy. So I was, you know, meeting girls at nightclubs, at parties, things like that. And, you know, a girl who's going to engage in that is maybe different to someone who will hook up with you on, you know, you meet in the park and they just enjoy themselves and go back, right? But I would say there's not many women who will do that. And the reason for that is because it's out of line with what our biology dictates. It's actually, for most women, that's actually not what they want.
I actually find, I mean, just so you know where I'm coming from here to get into specifics, I would find having sex with a woman for the first time and she's drunk, I would find that abhorrent. Maybe I'm gay. That may be possible, but
no,
I don't think I could ever do that.
Times,
I've never been
in
that situation. So when I'm talking about casual sex, I'm coming at it from that kind of perspective. Like not, There's like a, like I said, there's a
good
way to do it. There's a bad way to do it. And you know, like, you know, people are damaged and they just kind of link up and do stuff. And I understand wanting to minimize that. I think of it in the context of, you know, like you get a bunch of 13-year-olds and I don't care how many anti-hazing lectures you sit them in front of, they're going to start hazing each other. And I see like that kind of like a sexual hazing, like, yeah, you know, it's not perfect, but this is how we grow and mature, and we're going to hurt each other a little bit, but I don't know, that's how we grow up. And, you know, maybe this just speaks to me, but I just would not have been ready to be a dad at 20. And I would have been a terrible father. And maybe it's just because of the culture or whatever, but
it's always a bit of both, right?
You probably been awful.
No matter what you've done at 20, like I think even in the historical sense, you're still lacking a lot of life experience and maturity that is required to be a father, you know, to be a good. See, this is something, you know, I've got a kid, two kids, one still with us. And it's, you know, one of the things I've kind of come to the conclusion of, and one of the reasons I actually think that Western birth rates are dropping is obviously there's technological reasons behind this. But I think one of the other issues is like, being a dad is the easiest thing in the world. Being a good dad is really hard. And when you have a, like, I do believe people in the West generally have a higher standard of morality than having traveled and been around the world. I do believe that.
Yeah, think Western civilization is the best, obviously.
Is the best, yeah. That's because it's based in Christianity. But
well,
like...
it's based on a kind of Christianity. I do think Christianity has something to do with it. The ancient Greeks had something to do with it. Christianity is based on...
Christianity came out of Roman
Egyptian
and
ritual.
Greek, right? Yeah, yeah. So,
you know, I mean, it's an involved idea. And I do think Christianity is a good...
The best expression, because
it's an interesting expression of it.
Really,
I could see why it caught on.
It really takes, because it really
we're
does.
We're just going to talk past each other. That's okay.
Yeah, it's still good. As because it is like the reason I would argue is because it is a true understanding of the human psyche, the ultimate. And like if you look at a lot of therapy-esque stuff, it is based in Christianity. Without
okay, well,
do
let
the
me
same
ask
thing
you,
in
like,
a different way.
Like I've been reading the Bible now since 2015, just to make my way through it. I'm up to Galatians, just, you know, coming along.
Chipping away.
Yeah, I'm
it's
reading this,
and dense,
I'm, you know, especially parts in the Old Testament. I'm saying everything. This is 100% true. Like if you just see this as just like a psychological display, it's 100% true.
Mm-hmm.
So am I a Christian?
That's the thing.
Because if
like,
you just talk about how it's psychologically true, I go, yeah, you're right.
That's because it like the argument is we're created by God, and like this is God's dictating, this is life to us, and you can disagree with that, but I don't think the key thing of Christianity really does come down to, do you believe in Christ's resurrection? He can free you from who you are. Like you can
I believe that's metaphorically true.
Yeah, but you have to really believe it. That's the thing, and that's the humbling part, because I was in your situation for a long time where it's like this all makes sense.
I think I think it's more humbling that it is a metaphor. I think that makes it more profound
to
me.
I did for you for sure.
Like,
but I would disagree.
Like, okay, like at the beginning
at
of
the
this
center.
Talk, you said all we have access to psychologically is our feelings, and so I say yeah. So God's a feeling. And I think you would take that to mean I'm somehow dishonoring God, or I'm lowering him. To me, that's elevating the concept of God that I read about in the Bible, of this vengeful guy coming to get you.
Yeah.
Like this literal man in the sky. See, to me, that's more profound. That's more transcendent.
But that's what the Trinity is, right? The Holy Spirit is that feeling. That is what the Holy Spirit is.
I was under the impression that the Holy Spirit, because, you know, I get a lot of this from Jung. I'm a big Jungian. And he talks about the Holy Spirit being the transcendent function, that which integrates unconscious parts of you. He would say that's the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. I mean, the way that I visualize it myself,
let's do the
and
same
like,
thing.
I'm no theologian. So let's just be clear about that. Like, I'm a church going Christian. I read the Bible, but I'm not.
We all have our own personal relationship with archetypes. That's what we're talking about here. That's I'm not Northern European, but I get it.
So like what I would say is like the way that I visualize the Holy Spirit is like, well, the way that it's been told to me and the way that I, you know, I related to it is it's basically the form of God that lives within us. And that form of God is like when we have intuition, when we have like certain feelings, certain emotions, when we're tapped into that, we are tapped into God's source energy, as it were, within us. And he lets that reside within us to guide our actions. So when we're living out of alignment with God's will, that's why our emotions will go down into depression and things like that. Because whereas when you are living in alignment and you're following that element of God's will, which we can, part of which can be part of our emotions, but we are separate from it, right? So that it's just, and sometimes it's just a whisper. Sometimes it's very clear. It depends. But when we're living in alignment with that, that's when we actually live a life full of joy, right? Where you can genuinely feel joy throughout your experience. And joy is an experience. It's not an emotion. You can feel joyful and you can feel happy, but the actual experience of joy is like a modality by which you live life, if that makes sense. You know, you're full of love for people. You're full of kindness. You're full of joy. And like, it's not, that's not to say you won't be sad.
Can't you be joyful for a day and then the next day not be joyful?
No, that I would argue not.
Yeah, you think it's more of a sustained state. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have subscribed joy to that, but that's okay. You know, we all have our own relationship with this stuff, and it's interesting to hear yours. Sure.
And it's fun to talk about with someone who's intelligent and understands it and has his own views. So like, I hope you don't feel like I'm, you know, this is, for me, this is fun. This is a fun debate, you know, so I don't talk about these things very often with
people. this is fun for me. I mean, this is why I do this. Reach out to people and want to talk with them, because it helps me think and it's good fodder. Okay. Boy, I guess
we went deep in the weeds. So
yeah. where are we coming? I mean, I wanted to talk about divorce. I guess it's kind of like casual sex. Like, I think there's a right way to do, a healthy way to do casual sex in a very unhealthy way.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people just do the unhealthy way. So I understand what you're saying, but I think there's a really healthy way to do it. I wouldn't want to dissuade anybody from doing that. And I think it's, not perfect, but how we grow anyway.
I would say there's better and worse ways of doing it for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think it's the same thing with divorce. I don't know what your thoughts are on divorce, but I've just been coming up on Twitter a lot. In fact, now I remember, I think the first reason why I wanted to do this discussion is because, yeah, you retweeted something that said like the cure for guys' depression is like having a family or joining the military or things like that.
Oh, I don't think I put joining the military.
maybe it wasn't that, but it was there's like these external things. Like one of them was having a family and having children. And I think, man, when I was 20, I was depressed. That would have been the worst thing. And I just would have dumped all those issues on the kids.
So the idea is there's a process behind that which grows you. So that's kind of like, yes, there's an external.
Sometimes it doesn't. It. And if you're not putting logs on the fire, right? Like of course, you're just like trauma bonding.
Of course. So
I understand why a lot of people on the right are saying, hey, just get married. It's not that, like, have a family. It's what you want to do, because society or culture for so long has been saying, oh, like that's the worst thing. And kids are this. Kids are fun. They're an absolute blast. It's great having kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I see a pushback on the right saying, like Tucker Carlson said it. I know, politics aside, I don't care. He's just a representative of the right and representative of this phenomenon of saying,
kind of more, you know, get married right early. Style,
and I'm thinking, right, this is not like, that's good advice, you know, 200 years ago when you have to have a lot of kids early so they can help you on the farm. Like, I don't know if that's good advice right now. Like, get a dog, maybe that's a little bit less commitment.
Yeah. So obviously it's a process. Like the idea is that going through that process, if you do it in the right way, will make you a better man.
Yes.
But yeah, obviously like you, and you know, I do think the taking on of responsibility is what makes men men. I think that's what separates a boy from a man, is taking on responsibility. Maybe that's a bit of a, you know,
I mean, in a general sense, it's hard to argue with that. I get it.
As a general heuristic, right? Yeah. Let's just use it like that. Yeah. So, and I think going through that process, because it's not like you can just snap your fingers and have a family. I mean, you can. You can just literally, you can go engage in casual sex and have a kid right there. But is that having a family? Yes and no. You know what I'm referring to when I said that tweet. I assume I can't even remember typing it, to be honest. But this is the other thing about Twitter. You know, sometimes
that's why I was like felt stupid for even bringing it up. I'm like, where am I going with this? Like, he probably doesn't even remember. I just thought it was interesting. Like, that was the thing that
it's a good conversation topic though.
But it does relate to this actually.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's just about that's not what you do; it's how you do it.
Yes.
What we're saying here, and there's like an emotional process behind how to do it.
It's like what I said before of being, there's a difference between being a dad and being a good dad.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. You can get married, but that doesn't mean you'll be a good husband. Like, obviously, Twitter removes the nuance by design. I mean, they've tried to reduce that, which has killed the platform. But anyway, like, it's supposed to be like the idea that as you go through that process, like of trying to get a woman, first things first, you've got to meet a woman to get in a relationship. Right, back to what I do, like doing that's not easy today. Like, it's not that hard, but a lot of guys really struggle with it, right? Like,
it takes work, like you said.
It takes work, yeah. And it takes the right methodology, the right attitude. You know, it's a getting in a relationship is a very zero sum thing. It's like you fail, you fail, you fail, you fail, you fail, you fail, you're in one. You know what I mean? And it's like people can get despondent about that dating process when they don't get their results, and that's also where you have to disconnect from the results and just focus on the process.
Yeah
you need all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's but not then, about approaching the woman, it's about approaching yourself.
Yeah,
if you just keep your focus on that,
you'll do
good
better.
Things will happen.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a big part of what I, you know, is that it's easy to say, it's harder to do, right? And a big part of what I do is helping guys internalize that lesson through a process.
Yes, right, that's why you need a coach.
With reminders of what, you know, this is what we're doing, this is what you're doing wrong, this is how you're supposed to do it, blah, blah, blah. So that in itself, you'll have to grow to get to the position where you can be with the kind of woman you want to have a family with, right? Then you get into a relationship with her. I'm not recommending you immediately knock her up and have kids. Like, if you want to do that, okay, no worries. Some people are more well-developed individuals that can do it quicker than others, you know, like that does happen. Not everyone is dealing with the same level of problems.
Yeah.
And then you've got to go through the,
and I think it's very charming. Sorry.
What's that?
Have you heard of Beavis and Butthead?
I'm aware of what they are, but I've never.
Wait, how old are you?
I'm 30. I had to think about it for a second.
Oh, maybe you're probably too young for it, but anyway, it was just a dumb cartoon in the 90s. Anyways, you were saying, you got to be mature and it's like a process. And I get
having a good
doubtful
marriage,
though.
Have that first. You want to have a good marriage, and going through that process of actually developing yourself within a relationship will help you grow. And as you're going through this process, if you are approaching it the right way, which is the key sticking point, which I agree, like, you know, I'm not just going to say everyone will do this in this process, but if you do approach it in the right way, going through that process, you will take on more responsibility. You'll become a better person. Yeah. You'll have to, by definition, if you want to improve in these situations, you will have to face your problems, your unconscious problems, the things you're ignoring or you can ignore when you're on your own, to become the kind of person that you want to be the kind of husband and father you want to be. So, you know, obviously the tweet didn't say that, so I understand like why you would not get that. I'm not saying that everyone should just meet a girl, marry her in 3 months, and then suddenly society's problems are going to be fixed. I don't think society's problems are ever going to be fixed, for what it's worth. We can be improved.
We're always going to have problems. I mean, look out now. I'm sorry. I hate to break to everybody, but we're living in a utopia.
Agreed.
100% like, this
agreed.
Is what it looks like. It's not, there's crazy stuff going on, but I mean, I don't know.
You live in a Western country.
This is what it looks like. So
you live in a Western country. You know, you don't know how great life is at this time. Just think about this right now. Like, you can go right now to a grocery store and you can eat what only kings used to eat in the past for the price of like $30, maybe.
Yeah, I can't even
with inflation.
I can't even talk about it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's like,
this is something I have to tell myself every so often to be grateful. Cause you know, you get lost, especially on Twitter, you get lost in this stuff. And it's like, I have to just take that moment. Like, dude, actually life is really good. Like generally people have really good lives. You know, you here in Indonesia, I live in Indonesia. I don't know if you know that. Like there is real poverty here. You know, there's real poverty here. And
I can't imagine. I mean, yeah, I think I can't imagine. I was in Egypt not too long ago and it was it's weird. I just get a sore throat when I think about it.
Yeah.
But the poverty and I don't even want to go into it. I mean, I have this one sad story. I just got to put it in a book one day. It's just crazy. Just, I think it just says whatever. But yeah, you're right. You're right.
So I 100% agree with you. We live in the best time to be alive. And, you know, even, you know, the freedom that people have today, even we're talking about things that I kind of disagree with, like casual sex, like the fact that you have the freedom to be able to do that is in some way, and that is some way good. I just think there's downsides to that we ignore. But like,
yeah,
the fact that you can do that and you're not going to be socially ostracized, even though there's second and third order effects, I think do have problems. Like that's an amazing thing. The fact that you can do that and just live your life and get on with it, like, is in some ways it's amazing. You know, like we shouldn't lose sight of that.
You would probably think of it as just like part of us freaking out living so well. Like we don't know what to do with ourselves because we're not
invent problems.
But yeah, we got to like do some crazy stuff because yeah, we don't have 8 children to raise and like homesteading out, you know, doing all this crazy stuff.
Shooting bears that are coming after our livestock, you know, and
right. I just think like we said, feelings matter. And I think when guys go through the process of being married or anything else and they're tuned out, it's just going to lead to bigger problems. And
I agreed.
You know, part of living in utopia, I think, is to, you know, I think John Adams, I mean, you're probably not a big fan of the founding fathers as I am, but we like John Adams. Maybe you think he's a traitor or something. No, he was American the entire time.
We don't, you know, like this is the thing. Americans think Brits have like this real butthurt thing about the whole, we like, it's like a footnote in our history.
Okay.
You'll never hear a Brit bring it up.
You're over it. I'm sure you're
like
over
the French.
It. You're right. Yeah.
We don't like
you're
the French.
Right. Well, anyways, I really like John.
They're the ones who took over our country. We don't like the French.
Okay, yeah, you know, just that we had a breakaway civilization that whipped your butt. Oh, I'm sure that I'm sure it doesn't sting at all. But John Adams, he has a quotation of like, I studied history so my children can study poetry, my children study poetry so their children can study art. Like, we keep advancing. And I think we're getting to this place now of utopia where guys like us go, well, how do we really treat people? Like, how do we really interact with people? And the church laid down these rules, which I think laid out it well enough for a time, but now we've advanced to a point where it's like, you know, we gotta keep going. And I don't really disagree with anything that Christianity says. It's just like, we need to keep evolving the process that is Christianity, I would argue. And I think you're, you know, playing your role in that. By saying, you're part of the assumption of Mary. Like, you're part of that saying, look, sex actually matters and it's okay to express this and it's okay to be intentional and feel that desire that maybe you've been trained to believe is bad. Maybe it's not that bad. Maybe you just got to use it in a healthy way.
And that is actually what the Bible says. There's a whole chapter in the Bible about sex, you know, the Song of Solomon and how sex is good and enjoyable and pleasurable and it's from God. You know,
that's what that was about.
Yeah. So it's like that. That's like I think the puritanical element of Christianity has got like kind of, that's more the problem on that front. It's like actually the puritanical interpretation of that is more of the issue. And the other thing about Christianity is that you're granted forgiveness for your mistakes. You know, this is the other thing. I'm not like, you're not condemned for your mistakes. It's like, you can live out of alignment, do that and then come back. And it's like, you know, as long as you're genuinely remorseful, it's not a problem. This is, you know, something to remember about it. And I want to kind of flip back to the what you mentioned before, of like we're kind of almost inventing problems, like what's going on now? The fact that we can have this conversation, like you say, and actually talk about how do our emotions impact us and other people in life is a problem of abundance. It's only something that matters when you're not fighting for survival. Right. We're in a position where we don't, like, you know, I look at, you know, my wife's parents, for example. They come from like a literal village where they were hunting and farming, you know, and, you know, before they moved to the city, and there was a migration here in Indonesia, and they have all these, you know, pretty poor attitudes towards parenting and emotions and things like that that have impacted my wife and her siblings in some way. But as I keep saying, like, but we've got to remember, like, for them, they were literally fighting for survival. Like, the fact that in this moment they just had to be practical and not like indulge your feelings is like, that was a mechanism of their life that is like, that's lower on the order of importance. Yeah. You know what I mean? The most important thing is, like, here in India, I say it to my wife, the most important thing here for kids is just to keep them alive, because infant mortality here is still a big thing. Kids still die regularly here, for like healthy kids as well. And like, when you're in that situation where it's like more about keeping my kid alive is more important than managing their emotional threshold.
Yeah.
Right. The fact that we even kind of, these things even become important is a product of the fact that we live in the golden age. Like well, it's, we're dealing with different problems now.
Yeah.
They're higher level problems.
Yeah. I mean, it is higher level, and I agree with all that. At the same time though, I mean, you're religious. Isn't this kind of relating with people, isn't this part of what religion is? I mean, isn't within the same vein? I think it's a huge fault of modern therapy to try to distance themselves from religion as opposed to just becoming another part of it. And, you know, I mean, shamanism, that's proto-religion. That's been around, you know, for as long as, you know, all the other old jobs like chieftain and prostitution. So it's like, on one level, I understand what you're saying, but also what I think part of what we're doing here is getting people to, like what a shaman would do, connect with that spiritual plane. I say that spiritual plane is your relationship, right? Like, you think your problem is with money? No, it's with it's your relationship with money. You think it's your wife? No, it's your relationship with your wife.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And that's, I'm sorry to sound like a pretentious douche, but I am one. I am. It's just, that's, I can't hide it.
Own it. Yeah.
That is a shamanic way of viewing the world. And I think part of doing this work with those emotions that we can fine tune now, because I think society is advanced. We're not struggling. So I think that part is true. But I think the undercurrent of this is, you know, as you know, hundreds of thousands of years old, like as long as we've had brains like this, whatever your belief is about that, whatever. You see what I'm saying?
100%. Like, you know, I mean, that would have been historically one of the roles of a pastor and a priest as well, is to do this kind of stuff with their congregation. Yeah. Again, part of that was we were smaller communities, there was less people, so you could do this more. You know, if you've got a mega church, there's no way you can do that. Even at my church of, like, you know, there's 200 people, I think, that go to my church. It's like, you know, there's five pastors. There's only, you know, they can't know everyone, you know, that well as their family and everything else. They could probably do a better job of it, perhaps. But and there's vacancies, and people fill in those vacancies, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, like, you will always, you know, you can't do everything. You know, it's like, people can't do everything. You need to have specialists. That's the function of society. It's a function of civilization, I should say, is, you know, it's the move to specification. And we need people who can do this. And ultimately, I'm like, if you're doing it in the right way with the right heart and the right, you know, generally, like, I'm a big Pareto principle guy. If you're doing it 80% good, I can overlook the 20%. I might argue with it, but I'm not really that. That's more of an intellectual exercise rather than me actually, you know, caring that much, if you know what I mean. It's just like, I enjoy these kind of conversations. Like, I take pleasure in it, you know, it's fun for me. And it's as much about my intellectual stimulation as it is about being right, if you know what I mean. And maybe I'm wrong. Could be. I do believe I'm right. I'm not gonna lie, but like I think we should all probably believe it. Yeah. But like I'm open to the idea that you know, as long as it works, then you know, that's probably ultimately I'm a pragmatist. If you're making people's lives better, ultimately that's, you know, it's what I'm doing, just in a slightly different modality. And I do think that, you know, beyond some fundamental differences and kind of like, again, the kind of like the ontology of how we view the world, we're probably like 90% aligned, 95% aligned to be all told. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this, to be honest. I'm just kind of,
Yeah, no, I appreciate what you're thinking about. I think about this a lot. I just released a video called like a deductive valid approach or a deductively valid reason for why therapy works or why it exists. And yeah, I mean, this is something that I think about all the time that not many people in the profession do, is like, what even are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, why would you talk about an emotion? And I think a lot of people in the field just take it as given, like, well, that's just what you do. Makes you feel better. Yeah. You get to dump stuff. You know, they say all this stuff that it's just like these ideas that they get that's not based in anything. I really like to base this in reality and like saying, here's an emotion. Here's what we're doing. And here's why you need to be aware of that emotion. And here's how you do it. Here's what emotions are. No, so I appreciate how you're, you know, because man, you know, what helps me fall asleep sometimes is I watch these, like how it's made, like these industrial production lines of like how they make, you know, barrels that they age cognac in or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, the system, like, I feel like an idiot, you know, it's like, I want to do something in the humanities that reflects that, because I think a lot of guys who are probably more analytical like we are, you know, they took one philosophy class freshman year and they turned away from all this stuff. And it's like, no, like we got to stay here and not just give it over to the people who wear tie-dye. I actually think tie-dye is very, very cool and hip and it makes me look awesome. But that's, you know, one of my faults. Like we can't give this stuff up, you know? So,
yeah.
Like if a bridge builder, if they're going to build a bridge, you're going to trust, they're going to figure out how to do it. And I want people to have that same sense of reality when they go into therapy and work on their emotions. Like, yeah, it's going to be painful. It, you know, building the bridge sucks. It's painful, but we can do it here, you know, and I like, there's no reason therapy can't get to that kind of principled approach. It sounds like we're kind of both working on our own way of doing it, but.
Oh, 100%. I'm very method. Like my system is very methodology. Like there's a specific methodology that I've run behind it that is done. Yeah. From that framing, right. It's like the framing is, this is what we're trying to achieve. This is the goal. This is the goal you want, right? Which is, you want to get married, right? You want to have family in the future. Mm-hmm. This is the process that you have to go through to become the man to get to that point, and also meet the women, or the other side of the things as well. And like my whole system is built on the backs of that. You know, it's reverse engineered down. I've done it over years and refined it to a point where it is very methodology. Can't bloody speak now. It's very methodological.
Methodological.
There's a method to the madness.
My excuse is
no,
sons in my eyes.
The method is built out in a specific way. And if followed and adhered to, it's like in the past year since I've made like significant changes, particularly in the accountability structure, I've been running like 93% of my clients have been successful. Like, and that's a real number. And there is a variance of like, what is success, right? Like success is not getting married. Right, that not all of them have got married, but it's the point where you are like significantly a better person. And you know, if some people start here, and it's easier to take this guy to here than it is from this guy to here. But if I move this guy to here and he's like further along on that path, then I would consider that a success. And if they feel it was successful, I consider that a success. And there is an element of self-selection here, like the people that are coming into it are, you know, already on board, which I think is different from therapy. You know, kind of some people get referred to it. So I don't know exactly how it works,
but yeah, it's probably a selection bias. I have the same thing. Yeah. And I pick and choose. So it's like,
of course, for your own sanity. Right. So, but even in that situation, like comparable to other people, That's a very high success rate. And there's another element. I only take on so many clients a month because I, you know, I only need so many because of my prices. And that allows me to have an extra level of focus on these people, you know, that that maybe, you know, if you're seeing 40 clients a week as a therapist, you're not going to be able
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that I think that's a big mistake. I think, therapists see way too many clients.
Yeah.
It's a problem. Like you got to have space. Like if you're working with somebody, you need like a space in your brain.
Yeah.
To think about them and help them, you know, connect the dots. And you need to suddenly have them in your dreams and like, you know, give it to them, you know, really put it in. Like like I said, I want to live up to that automated machine, that industrial machine that makes wine barrels. Like,
I don't know if it can ever get to that point just because of the nature of, you know, humans, but I think we can get much closer. Yeah.
You say there's a method of
inanimate. You know what I mean? We're not inanimate, that we have agency, and you know, that dictates that we'll never be as, you know,
100%. Wait, we're not in anima? I'm sorry,
inanimate. Sorry, inanimate.
Oh, inanimate. Not,
like,
right,
a barrel
right.
is just a piece of wood that you can, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, you know, like I think a lot of, I mean, I know a lot of therapists get really, you know, their butts really tighten up when I say there's a method of therapy, because it seems like every therapy session is going to be the same with everybody. And it's like this rote process, but it's like, there is a method, but it doesn't, if you don't understand what's going on in the session, you wouldn't see, like, you would just maybe think it's all over the place or something. So like, I think, you know, therapists in general are resistant to the idea of there being standards and principles or methods. And
at the end of the day, we're all human, and we all have, you know, psychological overlap. How those things manifest in our life is what differs. And you know, there are obviously interplays in personality, as we talked about before and stuff, but like, I agree, like generally speaking, like we're more alike than different. And if you can tune into those things and fix those things, I agree that like I run a specific program with every client, but how that actually manifests with each client is different, but we're doing the same thing. Some people respond better to one type of language. Some people respond better to a much more methodological, you know, I'm doing it again, that bloody word, you know,
methodological,
more systematized approach.
That's some the people, right way of saying it. It seems like it's a made up word.
It does. But
it, when you say it,
some people
loud,
prefer
like
it systematized. Some people prefer a lot more analogy and a lot more, you know, that. But in terms of what we're doing, it's the
same thing. Yeah. Man, I just got in so many arguments in freaking grad school over this, and it just never went anywhere. And I just think we're talking around circles, but
I'm a sociology. That was my field. So I was
so you were like the worst type of atheist.
Yeah, I was, but I was always,
you are much more than an atheist. I'm not that type of atheist. Okay.
Yeah, no, I was, so I also had many of these kind of debates. Similarly things. Men and women are exactly the same. It's just like, I could never wrap my head about how you could actually believe that to be true. But some people do.
Yeah, nobody really believes it. It's just something you say. Like, everybody believes that, but I don't know. You probably run in like parent communities and everybody says like, oh yeah, boys and girls are different. It's a completely different thing.
Yeah, 100%.
It's so obvious. Well, Jack, it was good talking with you. Thanks for coming on and doing this.
Yeah, no, appreciate it.
How can people, I mean, I'll put your Twitter handle in the description.
Twitter is the main place to find me. I also have just started up an Instagram, which I'm looking to grow more, just because of the changes on Twitter. It's just not the platform it used to be. So I'm branching out off of Twitter, even though I, you know, it'll always have a special place in my heart. But the main place really to get my good stuff is to get on my newsletter, which I send emails out 3 times a week on how to find me, overcome these issues from a Christian standpoint. If you're not a Christian, I just wouldn't bother, because it's not, there will be stuff in there for you, but it's not written for you in mind. But yeah, if you are a Christian guy who's looking to get married in the future, I would 100% recommend subscribing to my newsletter. There's a link on my Twitter, there's a link on my Instagram, there's a link. You'll find the link if you follow me long enough, and you'll get some free trainings and stuff like that alongside it, to kickstart your process immediately.
Awesome. Well, you know, I can tell by the way you talk about it that you're not just like a regular dating coach. So that's good to see. I know Pat was one like that,
Yeah.
and you are, and that's good to see because whatever,
There's
you
some
know.
bad ones. Yeah.
Well, most of them are just like atrocious and guys with a lot of relationship issues. I know I sound like a stupid journalist whenever I say it, but it's mommy issues. That's what it is. That's you know.
Part of it.
So anyway, so good to talk with you, Jack. Thanks for being here and take
No, I
care.
appreciate it. I enjoyed it.